Sahana Bhavatu, Sahanao Pranatu, Sahaviryam Karvavahai, Tejas Trinavati Tamastu Ma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. I'll probably be talking these things, but I just see a question from Jagadisha here. There are many very committed mumukshus, but somehow, despite their great dedication, the recognition of satyam is not clear. Yes, it will come in time, but how can the process of recognition, the clarity and the firmness of satyam is myself always be speeded up and not to just remain in hope? Well, I think the main thing there is to understand what we mean by satyam, kind of experientially, in terms of your own, the totality of your own experience, subject-object experience. Satyam is a word that, in a sense, is very related to the word mithya in terms of the totality of our experience. Satyam, what we call satyam, is not a thing. It's actually an order of reality. It's the level of reality something may or may not enjoy. And so for something to be enjoy the order of reality that we call satyam, it can never change. It, the definition of it is that which cannot be negated in past, present, or future. And so to discover in your own experience what is satyam, it has to be, you have to discover that which is not subject to time, is not subject to change in any way. Just think of the definition, that which cannot be negated in past, present, or future means it's not subject to time. If it's not subject to time, it's not going to be something that you can perceive within duality, because within duality, everything is subject to time, subject to coming and going. And so we actually can't have an experience of satyam in reference to the world that we experience, because the world that we experience is coming into being and going out of being all the time. That's its nature. The only experience that I have that is not coming into being and going out of being is only me, not as an objectifiable experience, but it's just me, my own presence. I'm the one who is there present as me to every experience that I have, whether it be an emotion or a perception or something, vritti, an intellection of some sort, imagination, whatever type of vritti it is. Vritti by nature comes and goes, the thought modification by nature, it comes and goes, and by nature I remain. And so the discovery of what is satyam is not a philosophical concept or something difficult to discover, really. It just has to do with viveka, with this being able to discriminate my own changeless presence from all of the experiences I have, they're coming and going. And since I am a constant in all of my experience, I should be able to differentiate that from all of the things that come and go, which is everything else, actually anything objectifiable, anything that exists within time and space, anything that's subject to change. That's what we call mitya. Mitya has no beginning, it has no being, it has no end, in the sense of it's a continual cause-effect series that you can never find any type of substance upon any kind of analysis, because it comes into being, it goes out of being. If you try to look at into what it actually is, it's infinitely divisible. You can never find it. That's the nature of the creation. That's the nature of your thoughts, of your feelings, of your moods, of your emotions, of your perceptions. All of the experiences, as long as the experience comes and goes, it's not you, because it's gone and you're still there. So in a way, this is very, very simple. It's gone and you're still there. General Jagadish says, pranams, perhaps a better word would have been Brahman instead of Satyam. Okay. Brahman, then we're talking about myself. What is Satyam, if you discover? What is Satyam in my experience? Which is only going to be the Atma. It's only going to be me. Because I'm the only one that's not objectifiable, not subject to coming and going. I'm the only one that's continually present as all experiences come into being and going out of being. I'm the only one that doesn't do that. Because I don't do that, I'm free of time. If I'm free of time, I cannot also be objectified as an object within duality. It's not possible. Anything that can be objectified exists within duality is subject to time. I can't be subject to time because time takes place in me, in fact. All coming and going is something illumined by me. I'm the always the constant. I've never had an experience of myself not being there. I've had experiences of many different types of emotions where I feel very alienated from myself, but I'm always there as the one who's suffering that particular emotion. Suffering means the emotion is taking place in my presence. Once I say I'm not objectifiable and I'm free from time, then I'm Brahman. I'm indivisible, I'm non-objectifiable, I'm free from time, I'm indivisible. And each one of us says that, I'm not objectifiable, I'm not subject to time, right? There's no way for me to be different than you, to be other than you. Two of us are not objectifiable. There can't be two. You say two of us are not objectifiable, then we're already within time and space, because there's two of us. And so the discovery that I am Brahman is not a discovery of a little Atma becoming a big Atma, or a little Atma becoming a universal Atma, as though there's any type of shift or change in my self-experience. There's no shift, change in my self-experience, because my self-experience is me, the conscious being itself. It is not subject to time, is not subject to space, and so it is neither big nor small. If I'm not subject to space, space is illumined. I'm not the small Atma that recognizes I'm a big Brahman. I recognize that this Atma that is me is Brahman. Brahman is just a word that replaces the word Atma in my recognition that the self that I am is the self in which the whole creation exists. The self that I am has to be the self that you are, has to be the self of all beings, because I'm not divisible as our objects within duality. So the discovery that I am Brahman is not an experiential discovery. It's the recognition that there can't be two of me, number one, because I'm not objectifiable, and so that this me that I am is the one me that all beings have as their self. That's number one. And number two, anything that is objectifiable, existing within time and space, doesn't enjoy the order of reality of being Satyam. It can't be Brahman. Brahman is the only thing that's Satyam. It can't be Satyam because everything within time and space comes into being and goes out of being. So it's bordered by non-existence, so it has no reality of its own. It's kind of like the pot coming from the, say you have a lump of clay and the pot comes from the clay and goes back, is sustained by the clay and goes back into the clay. The pot is mitya. It has no being of its own. It comes into being and goes out of being. But what is the thing that is being, that has the being? The clay, not the pot. The pot, there is no pot. There's really only clay. Even though there's a useful pot, really there's only clay. So the whole universe is like a pot. It has no being of its own. The only thing in the totality of my experience that has being really is that which has not come into being or go out of being. And that excludes all objectifiable experience. I'm only left with myself. All beings are only left with the self. It's kind of like the dream. Imagine the dream, all the dream characters in the dream. Say they're all mukshus. They have a dream guru. All of them recognize that their body, mind, sense organs, all objectifiable experience are mitya. They all belong to the dream. But then they recognize that the self of all of those experiences, their self, is really the self of the whole dream. Each individual recognizes their self is the self of the whole dream, which means that each individual is going to recognize that myself is yourself. I am you. There aren't two of us. And so when we talk about recognizing Brahman, it's not recognizing a Brahman experience at all. It's recognizing, in fact, I am Brahman. I am Brahman because there's not room for two of me. For there to be two of me, I have to exist within duality. So, hope that kind of makes sense. Another way of saying that is that the Brahman experience is already here. The Atma is Brahman. So there's Atma's, the recognition of myself is not going to change. The self-experience, the self-evident self-experience is not going to change when I recognize that I am Brahman. When I recognize that I am Brahman, what I recognize is that there's only one of me. Like recognizing that my being is the self of the dream, I recognize that my being is the self of the universe. That's what we mean by Brahman. One who's the self, the very truth of the Jagat, the creation. But there's no change in experience.
Does that mean my sense of Brahman, my sense of being a conscious being, is exactly the same as Brahman?
Yes.
Exactly the same as Ishvara? That sense?
Yes. Your sense of me, the conscious being that is changeless, that viveka, differentiating your own presence from anything that's objectifiable, that self is Brahman. But there's a knowledge to be gained there. The whole knowledge of the Upanishad is that the Atma is Brahman, that the Jiva is Ishvara, I can say like that, that this self is Brahman. That doesn't bring about a new experience of the self. First of all, the self has to be different. Yourself has to be differentiated from mitya, all the things that are coming and going. You know, so you can recognize the stability of your own being. But the recognition of my being as Brahman is the recognition that my being is the one being that is there, the one non-dual being that is there. If that doesn't bring it about another experience of yourself, it's just the recognition that that self is the self of all beings, the self of the universe. But it's not that yourself becomes big or small or changes in quality. I'll repeat the question. It asked, the self experience that I have right now as myself, as the Atma, is that exactly the same as Brahman? That self-experience, right, Edward?
Yes.
Is that experience, that self-experience, exactly the same as Brahman? And I'm saying, yes, it's exactly the same. There's only one self. And when I say self-experience, I mean the self-evident conscious being, not that there's a subject-object experience, but your being, because it is consciousness, is self-shining, self-evident. We use that Swata Siddha, Swata Prakasha, self-shining, self-evident. When we say self-evident, what we actually mean by that is that you don't need a pramana or a means of knowledge to light it up. It's its own light as consciousness itself. So then the question is that me, the satyam, the self which is satyam, means never subject to birth or death or change or time in any way, is that me experience, the same as the Brahman experience? Say, yes, absolutely, it's absolutely the same. The thing is that with the teaching, with the Mahavakya, first of all, there has to be a viveka that allows me to differentiate my own, the changelessness of my own being from all objectifiable experience. That needs to take place. And then I need to recognize as part of that viveka that this me that I am is, in fact, the one me that is there as the self of all beings. See what I mean? So it's not a change in the experience of me. It's the change that there is only me.
Yeah, I see that. But I guess it's my resistance thinking that Ishvara is infinite and I as a jiva is so confined.
Ishvara... Ishvara Upadhi is infinite.
That's right.
The one Atma is the same. Like if you have a dream, the self of all of the jivas in the dream is the self of the whole dream, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So from the standpoint of the Atma of the dream, the recognition is for each jiva is that, myself is the self of the whole. The jiva Upadhi is limited compared to the Ishvara Upadhi. It's like a wave in the ocean, but the self is not.
Yeah.
Right. is not different? And does it become different? You don't become somebody else just because you recognize you're Brahman. You've always been Brahman, you just didn't know it. So there's not change in experience at all.
Well, why do you kind of resist that? Because the body is infinite, and then the other body is finite, but there's an identity, identical. So should that be satisfying?
No, the upadhi is finite. Another, the jiva upadhi is finite. Another way of looking at that is the jiva upadhi is part and parcel of Ishwara, like a cell in the body, right? So actually, there's only Ishwara there. You know, so the jiva is only part of Ishwara, the nama rupa. Okay. So really, there is no jiva because the truth of the jiva is only the atma, which is Brahman, right? So, what was the question?
No, that answers what I asked. It's just that you have kind of it goes against the habits of your thinking, even though you have that recognition.
It does go against the habits of your thinking. That's why you do nididhyasana. Nididhyasana, really, the definition of nididhyasana is that which removes viparita bhavana. To get rid of the viparita bhavana. Bhavana means that tendency to take yourself to be the opposite of what you are. Because beginningless ignorance means from the standpoint of the jiva, from the standpoint of the mind has, from beginningless time, not had self-knowledge. It takes itself to be the conscious being, and therefore it's very subject to whatever moods it becomes, whatever it's thinking, and it becomes the physical body, whatever it thinks. Right? Even though none of that's true.
Yeah.
It's none of it's true, but you're living that reality. It's like the boy who mistakes a rope for a snake is living the reality of the snake, not the rope. So we're living the reality of being, you know, this mitya jnanam, actually, of being a jiva, subject to birth and death and pleasure and pain and all of this kind of stuff. We're living that reality because of a jnanam until we know the self. And then we have this habitual ignorance that has to, you know, be dealt with over and over again. That's the sadhana, though.
But that seems to be a painful process when you keep standing in the wrong place with your identity.
Well, I would rather have it be a painful process with knowledge than an endlessly painful process without it. So the painful process is, if you can want to call it like that, is just, I don't think it need be a painful, let me put it like this.
Yeah.
To the degree, that's what the meditation, one of the things the meditation was about today, to the degree that you can accept your experience in the moment, accept the experience, not pushing it away by saying, you can be with me. You know, having that differentiation of yourself from your experiences, then not pushing those experiences away, right? That takes away so much of the pain. What's causing the pain is the mind pushing the experiences away, and so the mind's getting entangled in itself. It's not able to push the self away. It's like the bangle trying to push the gold away. That's not possible. So the mind is trying to push away the mind. So it's getting itself in different, varying degrees of stress loops, you know. And so once you stop that and say, oh, it's okay, all of you, you can be with me, internally and externally. What if I'm able to say to the world, you can be with me, it's okay. I don't have any reason to push you away. I can deal objectively and be helpful in the situation to the best of my ability. That's the best I can do. But I don't need to push you away. There's no, that's avayam. That's freedom from fear. There's no problem. But we're not conditioned that way, of course. And so that's where I do nididhyasana, why I take my sadhana seriously to being with my mind. Like Swamiji says, never compromise one, not even the slightest bit in terms of your knowledge. That's the sadhana. When the mind, the samsari mind comes up, it's being able to bring it home in a loving, non-rejecting way. So Jagadish says, my mind has a care for the dedicated beings who wish for this vision to be nishta for their mind, but it is not clear in the minds, so that there is a desire to speed up the nishta to the minds of those who are so dedicated. Well, I think besides for a mumukshu, if they're a mumukshu, they should have the right teacher for them. Just by the fact that they are a mumukshu, I think the person mumukshu meets their proper teacher. And then understanding the sadhanas that are really helpful, giving the value for those sadhanas that are really, really helpful. I think one of the sadhana, like the kind of meditations that we're doing, they become the way you are with life. I think those type of meditations and certain attitudinal unfoldments, those are sadhanas that speed up everything. You know, they make a huge difference. Even inner child work, all of these things, all of these sadhanas are getting rid of what we call the pratibandhakas, the obstructions in the mind. But some emphasis has to be put on giving the students and mumukshu a value, you know, value for the value of Swamiji's value of values, a real understanding and a value of these sadhanas, you know, that really help the mind to deeply own up the teaching, the vision that it gets at the time of teaching. Say you do the shravana, manana, your vision is clear, but your mind's not owning it up. That's that viparita bhavana. It's always behaving as a samsari in spite of knowing. And so there are many different forms of nididhyasana, but nididhyasana has to do with helping the mind to own up that vision in many, many different ways. Hopefully that makes sense. That's what speeds it up. But another thing you can do around that, Jagadish, is that we've been here for infinite, beginningless lifetimes, and so how speedy does it have to be, really? Doesn't have to be that speedy, you know. It's a non-issue.
Yeah.
And so the practices can all fall off because they become non-issues.
Yeah.
Right?
But they stay there if it's...
They stay there just as your knowledge, as who you are. The ajnanam, habitual ajnanam, has gone really because of the practice and opening up your vision.
Well, I was thinking about this habitual ignorance. Can be replaced by habitual
knowledge.
Yeah.
In chapter 7 of Panchadashi, he makes the thing. I mean, a person, or maybe this one. Actually, this one is in chapter 1 of Panchadashi, I think. You know, you can just like a agnani goes about doing all of his or her work and life, living the life. As the body, I am this body-mind person.
Yeah.
Right? They just go around. They go through their whole life. I am this. They don't have to walk around saying, "I am the body. I am the body. I am the body." They just know that all of their thoughts. It's a mithyajnanam, right? But that's what they're rooted in. They're rooted in that ajnanam.
Right.
I am this body-mind sense organs person.
That's common.
Oh yeah. That's how it is in the world. unless you gain self-knowledge. So a person doesn't have to walk around at all thinking about I am the body, or saying it or reminding themselves. They have nishta in that ajnanam.
Yeah.
Okay. The jnani has nishta in jnanam. They don't have to walk around saying, I'm Brahman, I'm Brahman, I'm Brahman. I'm really Ishwara, I'm really Ishwara. Jiva is all mitya. They don't have to say that because it's very, very clear. It's their knowledge. It's who they are, right? And so your knowledge matures into that as the pratibandhakas drop off, as the doubts drop off, as the habitual behaviors drop off. In the meantime, we should enjoy our sadhanas. And sadhana is not all the time. Sadhana comes up for you when there's a problem. Means when I'm behaving like an ajnani and find myself in the midst of some, Swamiji would say, some gutabut, some kind of goofy thing, find yourself in the midst of it, then the sadhana comes up. Perfectly. And that should just be normal. That's not something to worry about. That's just, you bring your mind home. That bringing the mind home is nididhyasana, really. In fact, Paramarthananda, in one of his talks, talks about nididhyasana in a way I really liked, making it much more than just meditation. Nididhyasana happens all the time. It's just that act of bringing your mind home to your knowledge, home to your being, home to yourself. And so that encompasses all the whole variety of sadhanas that allow you to do that. I like to talk about it as just that very gentle shift of focus. When I say that, when we start using language like that, that gentle shift of focus, we're really talking about that karya karana, cause-effect relationship between Brahman and the universe, which is really satyam and mitya, because Brahman is really the only thing that's there. And so that little shift of focus is just can be so subtle, so gentle, because there's really nothing but you there. Once you recognize yourself through the teaching, you know, then you get used to just coming home. Whenever the mind is getting lost in one way or another, or thinking in a way that's kind of like a bouncing ball down into samsara.
Seems like you have to do that more than just once. I mean,
you have to do it many, many times, and it should be pleasurable.
Yeah. Yeah.
The very act of doing that is a pleasure.
Right. But you expect the recognition to be adequate to make that permanent, but
it's not the recognition so much as the, you know, as the whatever the tenacity of the mind is around certain things. Yeah. But that shouldn't matter. What difference does it make if you can bring it home? That ability to just bring it home, that kind of subtle shift, is all that's necessary. And there's no reason to be in a hurry. As I say, it's been beginningless lifetimes. We can be in a hurry, but who are we hurrying for? We're not talking about very much time here. So what if you spend 10, 20, 30 years compared to, you know, a billion years that you've been here? Billion, 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 countless years that you've been hanging around. Now we're worried about spending, you know, the rest of our life really reveling in this knowledge.
Yeah, I agree with you, but I don't take that perspective very often. I mean, that.
I know, but that's why we have to keep talking about it.
Yeah.
And that's why nididhyasana is important, because what you do in nididhyasana, say if you're when you're contemplating, is actually just a little piece of your life. That nididhyasana becomes actually just natural.
Yeah.
what you do in contemplation is becomes natural, because your being is always present. Your being is always in the forefront anyway, you know. And your mind is always resolving into yourself. As Swamiji once said, I rest between my thoughts. All he means by that, to really understand it, he said, I rest between my thoughts. I think Chuck or somebody had asked him, you're always working, Swamiji, when do you rest? I think it was Chuck or Tom or one of those guys. And Swamiji said, I rest between my thoughts. All that means is that the thoughts just continue to resolve into my being. They don't resolve into each other in this type of web building. They just are always coming home, if I can use that kind of a metaphor. But that's something to contemplate on. That's really very beautiful. Okay, good night, everybody. I'm going to walk out this little door on the top right-hand corner.